Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Charlie Shufeldt, CEO of Elk Range Royalties, who came back onto the podcast to talk about some of Elk Range's latest transactions in the Permian and Eagle Ford, and the development of their portfolio since October 2021, when Charlie was last on the podcast. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Charlie had to say.
All right, Charlie, welcome back onto the podcast. Good to have you. You guys have been active and you close out your first fund and you're on to fund two. So a lot's changed since you came on in October 2021, so I'm looking forward to diving in.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
You bet. So as I mentioned, October 2021, so we're looking at, I don't know, a year and a half, a little over that since you last came on the pod. Give me a little overview for those who haven't listened to the first episode. And if you haven't, I encourage you to tune into that just to get the full backstory on Charlie and his career and then the start of Elk Range. But just the 2-minute recap to give everyone context, and then we'll dive into kind of pre-October 2021 and post-2021 on what you guys have been doing and acquisitions and the portfolio, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, rewind to October 21. We were a little over a year old. And at that, we were doing two things. We were managing two legacy portfolios for NGP. So we had inherited management of Lux Minerals in the Permian. That was about a 15,000 NRA position. And we inherited the Land Run Minerals portfolio, which was a little less than 12,000 NRA up in the Mid-Continent. And then we'd been working, as I said, for about a year as Elk Range to put money to work under NGP Royalty Partners 1. And we're lucky enough to close a deal, I guess, in late September to pick up about 5,000 net royalty acres in the Permian in an override package, which was really the foundation acquisition for Elk Range 1.
Great. So then, you know, kind of from that point onwards, you guys have really built out your team. You've done a handful of larger deals that have gotten press released. The ground game has really kind of developed and you've grown out the portfolio and then since closed out Fund 1 and recapped with NGP Royalty Partners. So as of today, where does the portfolio stand? What's the breakdown by basin? And then I guess bifurcate that of Elk Range 1 and Elk Range 2, and then we can kind of go into the specifics deal by deal.
Okay. Yes. There's a lot that's happened over the past 18 months. You know, we've made a lot of acquisitions, both in Elk Range 1, closing that out in February of this year, and then kicking off Elk Range 2. In addition to that, we also closed a divestiture from Lux Minerals, where we sold a third of that asset to the folks at Saxum, and that closed earlier in May of this year. So been busy both on the buy and the sell side. You know, as far as the Elk Range platform, you know, really been focused in the same places all along, had, you know, some more success in certain basins in Elk Range 1, and then again, been active in other basins, Elk Range 2. But that focus has really been primarily Permian, first and foremost. You know, Elk Range 1 was really a Permian portfolio with a little bit in the Rockies around that. But that was really where we ended up deploying capital. You know, we spent time in other basins. You know, we bought deals in the Haynesville. And then, you know, as we've gotten into Elk Range 2, we've had a lot more success in the Eagle Ford. I think we kicked tires on countless transactions in 2022 in the Eagle Ford and in the Haynesville. So it was nice as we kicked off Elk Range 2 to really have some success and get a big transaction done in the Eagle Ford. I think we'll see more and do more in that basin going forward, but remain very active in the Permian. I think if you look at all the marketed transactions that are out there, I think we look at just about everything in the Permian, bid on just about all of them. It's a very competitive basin. So, you know, I feel lucky that if you look at the last 2 years, we've won one deal each year. I think that's a hit rate that I'm happy with. There's a lot of work that goes into that, but I feel like we've got a good pulse for the market and what's going on there and what's being marketed. You know, in addition to that, you know, we've had some good success in the Rockies and continue to run a ground game there. And like we talked about, you know, the Eagle Ford will be a continued focus going forward in Elk Range too.
For sure. So just kind of unpacking and recapping some of the stuff you just mentioned. So Elk Range 1 was about 14,000 NRAs total, right? About 10,000 of that Permian. So like you said, very heavily concentrated in the Permian. You mentioned you guys just sold a third of the legacy Lux Minerals portfolio in the Midland Basin to Saxum Capital Partners. So congrats to Jim Mutry and the team over at Saxum.
Yeah, they were great to work with, really smooth transaction. So fun to get something done with them.
Yeah, and that's their second minerals transaction, if I'm not mistaken. The first one was in the Haynesville. So they're continuing to grow, which is great. And just kind of a side note, it's interesting. So many deals in the mineral space and time flies by. COVID seems like a decade ago. And you just kind of forget sometimes about some of the assets that are out there in portfolios that are getting harvested. And when they get to that right maturity date, you know, this was a legacy fund for NGP, right? It's not, the Lux stuff was not sitting inside of an Elk Range portfolio. And so for a variety of factors, it was the right time to monetize that and get an exit for NGP. And you know, I think that whether it's you guys on the buy side or others, those types of opportunities will continue to surface in upcoming years. And it's not always the latest fund that, you know, kind of comes together and goes to market. There's a lot of stuff in the background that you can kind of move past and forget that's going to resurface and exit, right? I mean, you know, it's interesting. I was just doing a prep call with Carrie Osicka, the CFO of Sitio. I'm doing a panel with her and some other women next week around capital raising and financing in the mineral space. She said, you know, Tim, it's super competitive in the Permian, but we feel like when we lose a deal to another group, traditionally a private group, that asset will probably come round full circle to us at some point. Maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 10 years, but we want to be the ultimate end buyer. And so when you kind of peel away the daisy chain over a decade long period, it's kind of interesting how stuff comes full circle. But anyways, moving past that. So, you know, what I find interesting, which, you know, this stuff doesn't really see the limelight, is the grinding, the ground game, the small stuff. You guys really built out the team. You've done 65 deals since October 2021, two of those being the larger press release deals, one with Tower Rock and the other in the Eagle Ford recently. Well, you know, it goes hand in hand, right? When you're on the ground with a pulse on what's going on, you're looking at a lot of deals. There's benefits to that in the larger processes, right? And vice versa. In the larger processes, you see a bunch of data and start to underwrite a bunch of things. And so having a ground game and a larger acquisition process, I think, is helpful. And then there's arbitrages between the two, depending on a variety of factors. And sometimes you do more ground game. Sometimes you strike and you get the right deal at scale. Walk me through that process of building out the team, some of the key hires you've made, increasing the deal flow pipeline and just kind of the smaller stuff and all the 63 wins that you guys have had over the last 18 months, which is great.
Yeah, no, there's a few key elements that went into that. Yeah, I think first is you got to have the capital to put to work. I think we've shown the market we're a very reliable buyer. You know, if we bid on something, we show up there to close. And so having the backing NGP across two funds has been very helpful. Plenty of capital to put to work. So we haven't had to worry about that. The next key ingredient has been building out the right team. You know, at the start, it was just me and Clint. And then we brought on Jeff Stewart to run our engineering group. And then I think if you roll forward to today, we're at something like 23 folks on the team. So grown quite a bit. And that's pretty evenly split between, you know, business development and land who are out there finding deals, getting them closed, our engineering group that's doing all the underwriting, and then our asset management team that manages the assets and does all the accounting when we bring those in-house. So, you know, just as we've grown, we've tried to keep pace with the assets we have under management and the capital we're trying to deploy with the right team there. Tried to marry that up with technology. You know, this is a low hit rate, high volume game. So there's a lot of work, a lot of deals to review, and you don't win all of them. So trying to find ways to make that as efficient as possible so we don't burn out the team. And so, you know, when a broker brings us a deal, we can be very responsive, but we've made quite an investment in technology such that we have a workflow where if broker sends us a deal in the morning, if we've got the right set of data to work with, we can get them an answer that afternoon on what we think that's worth and what we're prepared to pay. And you know, I think you made a comment that there's some synergies from running a ground game as well as looking at marketed deals. I think we, you know, improve our comfort in the basins, improve our data set by being active in both parts of the market, and that's certainly paid dividends. You know, as we've built up our deal count over the last 3 years here, I just think we're much better at underwriting, much better at understanding where the market is and kind of what you have to pay to get something done. So that's been a key element of success as well. And, you know, we try to be active in kind of the three segments of the market that I see. You know, one is our ground game where we're going to direct direct to mineral owners. The next would be working with brokers who are talking to mineral owners and bringing us opportunity. And then the next would be in the A&D market, where we're working with the banks on the larger opportunities. And, you know, what I've found over the last 3 years is, you know, on any given month, one of those seems to be working well and generating a lot of opportunity, and the other two may be kind of quiet, but it always cycles. So we want to be active in all three because there's opportunity to capture in each of them.
Yeah, no, talking to Peter and the others at NGP about the mineral space, it's so hot and cold in minerals. You have to have a ground game at all times. Just, it's just important if you want to have a continual deployment of capital. And so you look back at NGP strategy since inception, it's always had a ground game heavy element to it, right? And then opportunistically, you take down larger deals when the time is right. So the ground game, you've mentioned Eagle Ford, Permian, Rockies is kind of your main areas. You did a little bit in the Haynesville. Is it fair to say the ground game is touching all those basins, or is it primarily Permian, given just the amount of deals and inventory and the ability to, you know, sell the upside dream, if you may, in the Permian, where others are a little bit more developed? Walk me through the basin split and really the resource allocation you're making internally towards ground game on a basin level.
Yeah, you know, in right, each basin is different in terms of how we buy and how we approach the mineral owners there. I would say our ground game is pretty well distributed across all those. And I think, you know, some we have more success in than others. Like we've said it a couple times here, but we've spent the most time in the Permian. We have the best data set there. I think we're the most comfortable buying there. So I think that just leads to more success in that basin. But we're getting better in the other places that we're active. And so, you know, for me, it's really been about investing in the right people really over the last 18 months to build out that effort. So we brought on Asher Coe, who used to be at Pony, to help lead that ground game for us. He's got a couple of folks working under him. And, you know, we've got some proprietary relationships to give us access to information. So we can maybe get ahead of the bit sometimes, have a little bit better information on ownership in some of these places that are outside of Texas where you don't have the mineral appraisals. And, you know, but, you know, again, it's really a numbers game there. It's being set up to target the right mineral owners at the right point in time when they're ready to sell. But you just got to make a lot of phone calls to find the guy that's ready to transact. And so I think we've got a team that's very good on the phones with those folks. And I think we've had a lot of success the last 18 months converting on those deals.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagle Ford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. As a leading global energy business advisory firm, Opportune is well positioned to provide world-class technical, financial, and operational capabilities to minerals and royalties companies. Whether it's back office outsourcing, resource and reserve definition, land due diligence and administration, GIS mapping, valuation work, data and system integration, financial reporting, tax advisory, or buy and sell side assistance, Opportune LLP has got you covered. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
You know, when you look at your portfolio, and I'm not particularly familiar with any type of associated gas or Western Delaware exposure you have in the Permian, but your portfolio is pretty oil heavy. Is that by design? Have you guys looked at doing more gas? You said you dabbled in the Haynesville a little bit. The prices are now down. When you look at October 21 to today, it's been a fairly good oil market for deal activity, right? It's been up and down a little bit, but in economic levels, and then there's times to lean in and maybe pull the foot off the pedal a little bit when it gets a little frothy. But talk to me just in general about commodity. Are you more the oil player for NGP, or that's just the way the opportunity set has laid itself out?
Yeah, I think there's a few elements at play there. We have looked at a lot of gas deals. You know, we've been interested in Haynesville. We've bought some deals there. Western Eagle Ford bought deals there. Looked at some of the gassier parts of the Permian. And I don't know that we had a lot of success there, but, you know, there's some theses that we've chased in that area. And then, you know, even places like Appalachia are on the radar screen for us. I think when you look at a lot of the market dynamics around gas, seasonality, basis differentials, there's just a lot more at play there relative to when, you know, we look at underwriting an oil deal in the Permian. So I think our conviction is higher around some of the dynamics for what our, you know, at the wellhead realization is going to be in oil. That's, you know, at least one of the reasons that's driven a more oil heavy portfolio. I think, as you mentioned, prices are lower today. And, you know, we've got some macro factors like more LNG export capacity coming online. So some good reasons to look at deploying more in gas. And I think we're going to try. No guarantees we'll be successful, but it's an area where, you know, we think there could be some growth in our portfolio.
Okay, great. Let's fast forward then. February 1st of this year, you press release your acquisition of Tower Rock's Permian assets. So congrats to Oscar Torres and his team on that exit. He came on the podcast earlier this year talking about that deal. And then that press release was a concurrent announcement of the closeout of Elk Range 1 and the recap with NGP and NGP Royalty Partners for Elk Range 2. So why don't you break down, you know, that asset and that process, you know, when you guys started looking at that and just kind of how it all played out. I mean, when we were talking offline, I was asking you, you know, is there anything that sticks out in some of the bigger deals you've done? You said, yeah, they were complicated. The one you did in September, October of 2021, and this one, a lot of moving parts, a lot of wellbores, a lot of assets. So, you know, I think that plays well into your hands for some of the systems and technologies you have. I'll hand it over to you to break that down further.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, those two deals were both Ten Oaks deals. And as I mentioned, you know, we evaluate and bid on just about everything that's out in the market. So Ten Oaks guys know us pretty well, know when we've been close and when we've been far off on deals. And so on that one, I think BJ reached out to me early in the process and said, hey, I think this is a deal that could be a good fit for you guys in terms of how you evaluate and look at value. And, you know, it was a complicated deal. Again, you know, a lot of tracks, a lot of wellbores. As I mentioned, we've invested a lot in technology to create workflows that make it, I think, relatively easier for us to process stuff like that. And so I think that allowed us to find value in places that maybe others could. But that was a fun deal to get done. Oscar and team over there at Tower Rock were great to work with. You know, it was the final deal that went to Elk Range 1. So a good way to close out that portfolio with another chunky deal in the Permian. And, you know, it was good timing to get launched with Elk Range 2. You know, we had NGP closed on NGP Royalty Partners 2 this year. So that fund closed at $527 million. So a big step up from what NGP Royalty Partners 1 was. And so that capital was ready for us to access and get after putting to work in Elk Range 2. So we've been busy since February 1, you know, it's been very ground game focused, but we did have that one large Eagle Ford deal that we announced. I think, you know, we had a week back in May where we closed 6 deals in a week. So it's just been a pretty furious pace of activity. And I think, you know, one, we've got a little bit bigger BD team that's driving some of that, but I think we're also a better known name in the market. So lots of great brokers that are bringing us deal flow.
Sure. Before we move on from the Tower Rock deal, just a couple of follow-up questions. So for those listening, just a little recap. It was Delaware and Midland Basin. I believe there was some New Mexico stuff in there as well. I know talking to Oscar over the years, him buying in New Mexico, 2,300 NRAs, 2,600 wellbores, over 6,000 upside locations. So some meat on the bone for sure. And the LTM cash flow was $3.7 million. So that's all in the press release. When you say this, you have workflows and technology and processes in place to evaluate a deal like this, do you think it's simply just you're able to move quicker and not have to generalize and discount things that other groups have to get through the whole process? Is it there's some tricky title in there? I mean, when you say something is a little more challenging, define that a little bit more on why you think you can roll up your sleeves on something like that. Is it just other groups are saying, man, I got five opportunities on my plate, and all deals take a lot of time. This one is just, I don't know if I'm going to win it. As you said, it's a numbers game. And all things considered, this will drain my resources. I'm just going to pass. Or if I drum up an offer, I'm going to have to discount some things because I don't have time to underwrite all the different tracks or what have you. So
yeah, you know, I think it's really that last point you made. I mean, I don't know what goes on in other shops, but I know what we're capable of doing. And on that, you know, you had a lot of small interest tracks. It could be one, two NRA, maybe less than NRA. And, you know, we've got a system where we can have an engineered answer on what the value is across all those. And I think that's not necessarily how everyone else approaches it. So when we have a, you know, an engineered value across all those tracks and units, that's a pretty high confidence answer for us where we feel comfortable bidding there. You know, don't have to apply a discount for kind of an unknown factor. Yeah. So look, I think on a package like that, you know, we're going to get down to that more precise answer. Some of the packages where value is more concentrated, there may be others that can, you know, get to a better answer because they're just willing to lean in more than us. But yeah, I think that the complicated deals have been a good source of opportunity for us.
Yeah, you bring up something that's interesting. You know, certain firms have criteria. We won't acquire things that are under X number of NRAs per track. There's a challenge there from an asset management standpoint. It can become cost prohibitive to manage that. Would you say it's a combination of your existing footprint and owning in some of these tracks already, and then the combination of it, you know, helps it be justifiable? Is it the 23-person team and the infrastructure you built out to manage a larger portfolio that makes a deal like that attractive? Because I just know a lot of groups would say, you know, the cost and the time of analyzing, underwriting, title due diligence, everything for that many small tracks just isn't worth it. So what are your comments on just that as a part of a deal?
Yeah, look, and that's a fair limitation. And there's probably a point of diminishing returns for someone like us as well. But yeah, that's something we've been focused on from day one is, one, making sure that the cost to own these assets is as low as possible. So as we scale, you know, adding a wellbore or a tract, that, you know, we're not looking at having to scale people to do that, that we've got systems in place. And it's really just, it's really more, you know, adding rows to a database as opposed to people's time to manage it. So I think we've been successful there. But, you know, look, I think for any mineral shop, the biggest driver of your cost structure is your business development effort, both on the originating the deals as well as underwriting them. And so we need to be efficient there as well. So we've also invested a lot in, again, making sure that it is, you know, it's a technology problem to solve to get that engineered answer down to the small tracks, not a people problem.
Got it. All right. So well done there, you know, on the Tower Rock deal. Moving on, you mentioned this about 5 minutes ago, 1,700 NRAs acquired across DeWitt, Gonzales, and Karnes. So good core Eagle Ford position there, 385 producing wells, your name brand operators. And that to date is your single largest Eagle Ford acquisition. So, you know, walk me through kind of how that transpired. And you've done a lot more in the Eagle Ford and Fund too. So what is the impetus of that? Is it just the opportunities were there and stars aligned? There's a little bit of ground game, got this big deal, and that's just how it came together?
I think our activity in 2022 has a lot to do with that. You know, we looked at a bunch of different assets. As far as I understand, we were the bridesmaid on many, many processes. And so, you know, that was it was frustrating on the one hand to get that close but not get the deal. But I think it informed us on, you know, honestly, like what you have to pay in some of these places to win a deal. It also helped us build out our data set, probably refine where we really wanted to be in the Eagle Ford. And, you know, look, our strategy is pretty similar across the basins. We want to be under, you know, top operators in core rock. And, you know, as you talk through that acquisition and just look at who we're exposed to and where we are, I think we obviously achieved that. But you've got a lot of market therapy in 2022 that I think informed us where we needed to be, and got to see this opportunity on somewhat of a direct basis from that aggregator. And, you know, they we spent some time going back and forth with them, trying to carve out of their inventory what was a package that really fit well for us from a ResCat mix, stage of development, as well as operator exposure, and achieve their goals for getting liquidity on that portfolio. So I think it was a great outcome for both of us at the end of the day. They got a good price. We got a good foothold in Eagleford, excited about where that position kind of landed as a kicking off point for what we're going to continue to do in that basin.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford. With deal sizes ranging from 50K upwards of 5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Need energy industry management experience at your fingertips? Opportune LLP, a leading global energy business advisory firm, has the capabilities needed to overcome your minerals and royalties team's technical, operational, and financial challenges. To learn more, search Opportune's podcast E2B, Energy to Business, on Apple and Spotify Podcasts, where Opportune examines emerging financial and technology trends and provides a broad perspective on ways to stay ahead, create opportunities, and execute market strategies. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
Yeah, listen, I mean, everyone talks about buying wholesale through a ground game and potentially getting better cost basis versus paying for a consolidated position in the market process. But when you're dealing with another professional minerals firm that has investors, having a real honest conversation around, okay, what achieves your objectives? What achieves mine? And you guys, it's not the chasing some phantom number that a landowner may want for God knows what reasons, right? So it sounds like everyone put on their big boy pants there, and there's some trust in a relationship from the past, and you guys got a good deal done. So I think that's one of the things in the B2B world that's advantageous for transactional activity for sure.
And one thing I'll say is, when we press released the deal back in October of 21, that got some attention for us and really drove some more deal flow in the Permian. That was about a 5,000 NRA deal. Total in Elk Range 1 was a little north of 10,000 NRA in the Permian. So, drove a lot of that activity that happened afterwards. And, I think we've already seen some of that effect here with this acquisition. And like I said, we expect Eagleford to be a bigger part of the portfolio for Elk Range 2.
Awesome. Now, one thing you talk about ResCat mix. Would you say ground game is tending to focus on certain kinds of deals and the marketed deals you're looking for a certain development profile, or is it just a mixed bag and you're looking to achieve a certain outcome in the combined portfolio? Just what I'm getting to is if someone's out there, they're a broker, they're drumming up deals, they're a low to mid-size aggregator, and they haven't done a deal with you yet and they want to bring something to you. What is the right size, the right development profile, whether it's Permian, Eagle, I think Permian, Eagleford, and Rockies in general, right? If it's DJ Bakken, the other basins up there. If I'm listening and I want to build a relationship with Elk Range, what are the best things I should kind of bring to you to get your attention? And how should those deals be presented? What are some of the things that kicks it up or down the pipeline? Because I know you and your peers are all long deal flow. It's quality deal flow, people you trust, and there's all finite resources internally, right? You've grown your BD team, but you can't look at every single deal and you don't want to waste your time. So what are the criteria that help filter out the good and the bad deals?
Yeah, so that's a great question. For us, we'll look at a lot of things, but I think it's also helpful for me to talk about maybe where we're most successful. Because if you're a broker bringing us something, having a good idea where we're most likely to transact, I think is helpful as well. But in general, we're looking at the basins we've talked about, Tim, the Permian, the Eagle Ford, the Haynesville, anything up in the Rockies. We're starting to look up in Appalachia, so casting a pretty wide net there. We're very focused on deals that have some amount of either current or near-term cash flow. That's not a strict criteria, but we're just better if it's got some element of PDP, DUCs, or permits on it. We're just going to be, I think we win more deals to look like that. And the other criteria I would say are, the data has got to be in good enough shape to where, you really know what you're trying to sell us. If it's pretty fuzzy, it's just hard for us to get excited about doing the work. But when someone comes to us with, clear legal descriptions of what they're selling, well list, check stubs, that just increases our conviction around doing work on that deal and gets us to a pretty quick answer. And I think the last piece is just if it has an asking price and we've got something to shoot at, we're very good at responding quickly to that. In terms of deal size, a deal that we're not finding on the ground directly, it really needs to be north of $500,000 to rise to the top of the list. We got a lot of our own deals that are smaller deals, and those are going to get attention first. But the kind of $500,000 plus deals that folks bring us, we're able to be very responsive on those.
Yeah, listen, I'll comment on one thing that I've kind of found firsthand, because I focus primarily on helping firms sell, $500,000 to $5 million assets. And, my preference is always to have a client that will give me visibility on what they want for it. If I don't have that, it makes it a little trickier. But, I think there's some misconception of, if you give someone a certain number, you might be underselling yourself on what the market will pay. And the reality of it is, if you're going to take it to a few groups, you're going to get the right value for it if they put the time in. But if you're vague and you don't give them a number, they may never dig in and you may not even get their attention. So what I found and where I've had success selling deals is you just honest with the groups and you say, hey, this is the expectation. If you can get in that ballpark, let's dig in. Otherwise, if you kind of beat around the bush and you're real generic, it's going to get a few notches down in the pipeline. So I just have found that, again, it goes back to what helps and what doesn't. A lot, transparency and honesty is what comes up a lot. There's just so much deal flow in this space. I think trying to be cryptic and get the extra 5-10% is not a long-term strategy. And, your example with BJ and Ten Oaks, understanding what you like. I mean, there's patterns that get developed and relationships get developed. And the more you can dig in with folks and give them a shot, you work through the deals and they go, hey, we didn't get it done this time. But the next time they get something and they get a good feel for it, then there's better chance of success. I think what I found is evolution of my career. I started out talking high level about people's strategies, right? And I got a very good understanding of their portfolio, what they look at and what they like. And then as I started getting more involved in the deal flow, you really only understand what people are doing when you show them deals and you do deals with them. And there's
absolutely
80% more visibility on actually what matters and doesn't matter for the group. So until you dig into the weeds and give people a shot, I think it's hard to really figure out exactly what you guys like, right? But
and I think most people have had a pretty good experience working with us. And when I look at the deals that we've closed, there's a handful of brokers where there's been a fair amount of repeat business. We have a good sense for how they operate. They know what we're looking for. We can have good transparent conversations around pricing, and that's been a great recipe for getting things done.
Yeah, one kind of macro type discussion point around opportunity set going forward. I'd love to hear your comments on, what you're seeing in the ground game. One thing that's easy to think in the mineral space is, there's more groups. We're about a decade into this chapter of, consolidated funds and professional buyers and technology and the space getting more sophisticated. You think to yourself at some point, man, how much is left, right? And I think one thing that's interesting, as you start to get a lot of consolidation, the stuff that hasn't sold yet, you could think to yourself, well, those are never sellers, or they didn't sell at $120 oil or $30 oil, somewhere in between. Why would they sell now? The baby boomer generation is going to retire, pass away in the next 5-10 years. And I think there's an interesting breakup of those never sellers into grandkids who aren't as married and want to sell. And that becomes, you know, I don't know exactly when that line in the sand is where you start to get a bunch of stuff break loose and back out there where ground game consolidation becomes really interesting. But I think that's something on the horizon that's interesting. And you know, you always have to hang around the hoop with the ground game, right? And just be there. So I'm just curious, as you guys continue to beat the pavement, you've seen anything develop, or you have any thoughts on what the opportunity set looks like in the upcoming years and things to look forward to?
Yeah, that generational shift comment, I think, is an insightful one. And I'll come back to that. You know, I think for us on the ground, I mean, the key thing is just these are relationships with people. And so how you treat people, how you interact with them is the most important thing. You know, we've got, you know, four core values here at Elk Range. It's accountability, transparency, improvement, and trust. And, you know, that features most prominently, you know, how we interact with each other internally, but it absolutely applies to how we work with folks outside of these walls. And so particularly, you know, building trust with these mineral owners, you know, it's not like you're going to call them the first time you're going to get a deal done. These are conversations that develop over months and sometimes years. And so, you know, we always seek to be, you know, as transparent as possible in our dealings with them. And, you know, we'll see things on both ends of that generational spectrum. You know, we've done a number of deals where you have someone who's getting advanced in their years and wants to do some cleanup around their estate. And so, you know, we're involved in those conversations that provide some solutions there. And you also see kind of the other end of it where you've got the younger generation that may have inherited something and just, you know, doesn't have the same attachment to it that maybe their parents or grandparents did. And, I think historically the industry's probably been more focused on that older generation and trying to chase that. And I think you got to have conversations with both sides of that, because there's opportunities in both age brackets.
For sure. All right, Charlie. Well, listen, I'll hand the mic over to you to close it out. Anything we've missed, but just closing comments, 2023 to the end of the year and onwards to 2024, things to look out for, and thing you want our listeners to have a takeaway on Elk Range for.
Yeah. Well, Tim, thanks for having me back. It's exciting to come back here and talk about everything we've done the last 18 months. You know, you don't get that many opportunities to sort of put a punctuation mark in the year here and kind of look at what you've accomplished. I feel like in the minerals business, we're always on the deal treadmill and on to the next thing. So I enjoy getting to reflect on these accomplishments. But yeah, look, we've had a big year. We put a good chunk of our Elk Range 2 commitment to work, but still have plenty of dry powder. So, you know, we're going to keep running on that treadmill. So, you know, we're continuing to build out our team on the ground game and do more there. We're looking at lots of deals from brokers. And, you know, like you said, there's a lot of deal flow out there, but we've always got capacity to look at more. And, you know, for folks listening to this, if you've got opportunity in the basins we're active in, would love to meet you. And then we're going to continue to work in the marketed space, you know, on these A&D transactions. You haven't gotten our big deal for 2023, but we've bid on quite a few, and we're going to keep chasing them. And I'm hopeful that maybe we'll find that complicated deal that is a fit for us at some point before year end.
Awesome. All right, Charlie, well, have a great summer. Best of luck to the team on, as you say, continuing the deal treadmill. And we'll look forward to catch up in person soon.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Take care.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.